Hello, and we are back for the latest episode of the Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union with me, Chris Hill, and as well as Mark Sean, Rob Sean, and Dave Nicol, who, of course, by now, as you all will know, are the three men behind the incredible work which the Loose Heads Foundation do. So, guys, how are we all this evening?
Very well, thanks.
Thank you.
Excellent, excellent. I think we should talk once more about the raving reviews which the Mars 15s have been getting, Mark. I know this was an idea that we started out in April and we're like, we're not sure how this is going to go. But when you got Brian Abana commenting on your Instagram saying the idea is great and he loves the selections, this is slowly starting to take over social media.
Yeah, just proof that it's the greatest conversation. I always thought you have to have at least 5 pints to have it, but clearly you can just drink tea.
That might be an idea, though. We should maybe do one after having 5 pints each.
Abana makes my Mars 15, so it'd be great to hear from him and see if I make his.
Make the call, Rob. Make the call, Rob. You might get edged out. I'm not sure. You might get edged out. But obviously, massive thank you to everyone who has commented on our podcast recently and the Mars 15s. We really appreciate sort of the positive feedback we've all been getting. And I think our next two guests will make sure the feedback continues, because it's great to be joined by Gloucester duo Charlie Beckett and Tom Hudson this evening. Guys, great to have you on. How are we?
Yeah, we're good, thank you. I'm not sure what sort of responses you'll get to our Mars 15. We've potentially focused more on the touring side of things than the rugby side of things. Yes, so there might be some different reviews, but we've definitely put a lot of thought into it. Our whole day has been taken picking it, really, hasn't it?
Well, I'd just like to make the point that I think you made, Rob, on the preview. Is it a 4-week travel? Am I right in saying that?
So
4-week travel and 80 minutes of rugby. See, you see the maths there? You've got to prioritise the start. You've got to prioritise the travelling.
That's the thing, Mark. This is what it's about. You've got to prioritise the tour and the travel, isn't it? That's the whole point of the idea.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Young, old, male, female, doesn't matter.
We've got it all.
I was going to say we might as well kick it off, but we might well save the best to the last, as we always do.
People might listen to the whole podcast, or at least fast forward through all the rest of the stuff we say.
Why we've got you on, Charlie, to think like this.
We'll tease them at the start, we'll give them what they want at the end, Chris. We've done this before, mate.
You certainly have. Well, Tom and Charlie, obviously living together down in Gloucester at the moment, and you're back together, lads. It's a bit of a bromance. Is that too much to say, or?
No, it's not enough, I'd say.
Yeah, if you could have like a bro marriage, if we could have that as a thing. I had to go away for 2 years to find myself. I did a double gap year to Jersey.
Yeah.
Found myself, then we rekindled the relationship.
We made an agreement with our girlfriends that we'll only cheat once. So here's my affair, here's my mistress, Charlie.
And here's mine. And also, I like that Tom's dropped early there that we both got girlfriends. That's a real, look at us, how successful we are now, on and off the pitch. So that's nice. That, to be fair, that's probably the biggest difference to our relationship now living together is we both actually have an actual other half that we have to factor into our lives now rather than just each other. So when we lived together last time, it was just each other's emotions and thoughts and feelings we had to care for. But now we have people who actually do care about us.
Which is weird, because I thought that you only cared about your emotions.
That's a bit harsh and stark. There you go.
Sorry, yeah.
That's the sort of podcast it's going to be.
Yeah.
I think it's Trouble in Paradise, maybe, lads.
Well, you're still in the pot here, Chris.
Sorry. I'm here to make headlines, as you well know. I was going to say, obviously, this relationship started back at Leicester when you two guys were there. Is that right?
Charlie was a nobody back then. I was a pretty big deal. So he probably remembers me. Were you at Leicester?
Yeah, very good, Thomas. No, it actually started when Tom ran round me about 7 times from Wilmslow High School into Merchant Taylors in the under-15s Daily Mail Cup. But we didn't know each other. But yeah, so we were at Leicester in the academy together. So Tom's a year older than me, which you can probably tell looking at us both. So he made the venture south first, and then I joined him a year later. And then, was it 3 years we did in the academy at Leicester together before you left? Yeah, so we did 3 years at Leicester. So that's where we met. But to be honest, we were mates at Leicester, but I wouldn't have said we were that close. And then I think it was just the timing of us both coming to Gloucester together, didn't have any other friends, still don't have any other friends. but yeah, came to Gloucester, knew each other, ended up living together. It just kind of took off from there. And then in our second year, the first stint round for me, we ended up living together, coaching together, working together. Like every minute of the day was spent together. So we kind of were forced to get on more than anything.
Very, very fair assessment there. And I was going to say, lads, what do you have in common between you both? Because Charlie, we obviously did the podcast when we first met for Talking Rugby Union. There was probably about 20 minutes dedicated to superheroes and wrestling. So I don't know whether Hoodie still has that, shares that same passion.
No, I grew up. So what, things we have in common, we're both balding, which is nice.
Yeah, well, I'm not even balding anymore, I'm bald, yeah, you're joining me soon. Yeah, I'm Claire
balding.
So yeah, lack of hair between the two of us, yeah. Both drink copious amounts of tea.
Exactly.
Nice.
Yeah.
No, I'll have Yorkshire though, so this is one of our big flashpoints, is we drink different tea.
Don't put the ever mixed milk in the tea bag as well.
We make tea differently, but no, we both drink enormous amounts of tea, as you can see. What else do we have in common?
We're like probably the only few people that like each other.
Yeah, not many people like Tom, and not many people like me, but we actually like each other, so that's a good start.
Yeah, and we're bullied for it on a daily basis at Gloucester.
Yeah.
We won't mention names.
No, but everyone likes to take the mick out of how we're basically like, we only socialise with each other and that's it.
Yeah.
So.
How about football teams?
Well, Tom, so what happens is I'm a very passionate Liverpool supporter, as Chris and Rob know. So what Tom will kindly do is support whoever is playing Liverpool. So yeah, so he just will decide to support whoever Liverpool are playing. But yeah, that's where it comes to football. And then I guess we both like rugby a bit.
Yeah, we're not very good at rugby.
But we like it. We watch a lot of rugby.
Well, there we go. That's what the lads have in common. I was going to give the question as well then, Charlie, considering you're obviously superheroes and wrestling. If Hoodie was a superhero, which superhero would he be?
Chris, that's a really good question. He'd be... Oh, it's easy though. He'd be Iron Fist because he looks like him. He's one of the defenders. So if you Google Iron Fist, the actor who plays him, Tom, looks like him. But he also goes to Asia and gets taught by like this master to summon his inner chi. Is it chi or chai?
Oh, chi.
He's in a chi to power himself up, which we'll get onto with Tom later, I'm sure. But that's how Tom's career came back because he summoned his inner chi from Master Chai out in Asia. So they're basically the same person.
Some would say I've made all of Malaysia up and I just copied the footprint of
Iron Fist. Yeah, that's what you did.
I've been hustled.
You have been hustled. Master Chai was a con artist. Yeah.
That's nice, actually. You could have digged me out there and you've gone nice.
Well, you were mean to me before. So here we go. Mark's got, not the comic book character, Mark, because comic book characters don't like anyone. If you find the actor who plays him on the telly.
Should have big biceps first.
Exactly, so now I'm thinking I made the wrong call.
This guy.
No, you were mean to me early doors. Yeah, there he is.
Is that him?
That looks like Tom. If Tom had hair. I mean, I'm not sure. Yeah, look at that. Bad facial hair.
I've never seen it, Mark, so I can't vouch for it.
It would involve social media, Tom. So, off limits.
What's that? What is that?
No, this is the biggest lie in rugby, sorry. Tom Hudson loves Instagram. He's just a lurker. So he's on Instagram all the time, but never posted, doesn't he? But he's always on it, and he hates himself for it.
I need to, guys, listen. This is exactly what happens. I need to police what Charlie does and doesn't do on social media. So I'm only ever looking for all the bad things Charlie's put on. And there is a lot of material, may I add, on that.
He accidentally sent me a DM the other day. I said, why did you message me on Instagram? He said, I didn't realize I did. That's what I'm working with, lads.
Well, we'll probably move away from your relationship, but obviously get back onto it, guys. But we just wanted to ask, kind of, obviously, one thing that does connect you is sort of the work that you have been doing with Cheltenham Tigers, if that's right. And Charlie, having spoken to you in the past, we know how passionate you are about the women's game, obviously, Sarah in the England squad. And so is it something that you've both taken into your stride that it is helpful to grow the women's game and getting involved in the coaching side of things is only going to help that?
Yeah, like you said, Chris, I've spoken about on Talking Rugby Union a lot. I've written articles Talking Rugby Union, so my thoughts are out there massively. But yeah, I'll let Tom speak about it more. But we, in my last year here, so 3 years ago, we both took over as joint coaches for Cheltenham Tigers women's team. And then while I've been gone, Tom's carried on the last 2 years. So he'll speak more. But yeah, my thoughts are very obvious and out there on it. I think the big thing I've been speaking to Sarah about recently is kind of women's rugby is at a stage now where it needs the leg up from the men's professional game, but the men's professional game had when it turned professional. So 25 years ago when it turned professional, it had a leg up to help it get started. Well, the women's game is slowly turning professional, is getting more of a footing. We are an established sport. Our opinions on rugby, the wider audience, the wider public, take them as gospel. So actually, I don't want people to lie, but if these men do think women's rugby is great, which I am one of them who does, then I think we have a responsibility to be vocal about it and give it a leg up. So that's what I try to do on social media and when I talk to lads about it at lunch and stuff, have those conversations. But I think that's where we're at now with it.
Well said.
Yeah, well, listen, I've not got too much to add on that. The only thing I would say is Charlie was kind of born into it, obviously, with his dad and his sisters. I kind of fell into this opportunity. Just a very quick, brief description of how we got the job. A friend of ours who was a Gloucester rugby player, Matt Prothero at the time, he was coaching them on a very like casual kind of basis, doing what he could for them Tuesday, Thursdays. And he offered us the opportunity to do so. Charlie obviously had the background to do it. So we became the right pair. Ever since then, I've just been pretty kind of besotted by the whole sport. Now, I know Charlie's talking about having a leg up, you know, and I don't know if he's referring to some sort of injection of money or kind of social media platform. I've been in lower league women's rugby now. I think this is my fourth season, and I've seen the growth in the sport, and I really, really admire where it's going. And I think the accolade with that would be people like, just use one person, like Richard Blaze example, to kind of tie all the stories that we spoke about so far. Richard Blaze was our Leicester Tigers line-outs forwards coach back when me and Charlie were in the academy. And I haven't got any stats for you, but I'm fairly certain you know that he was one of the best around in terms of having a line-out winning formula. We'd won endless premierships while we were there. And he'd gone and coaching women for two seasons, you know. And then from that job, he's found himself, is it forwards coach at Wasps? Yeah. So that's the kind of caliber of coaches you're now getting in both male and female. So I love where they're going. I think they've got a real nice gradient of growth within the sport. As long as people, I mean, shows like this are continuing and we can spread the word. I mean, you've heard it here first. Women's rugby is going to be a proper kind of contender in 2 or 3 years' time.
Yeah, really interesting, Tom, that you talk about spreading the word. And Dave, just to sort of bring you in and probably ties in quite nicely with the hashtag Enough campaign, which Looseheads have been doing as well. And as much as what Charlie and Tom say is absolutely correct, the women's game is growing and it's slowly becoming better and better. There still are these stupid, and I'm going to use the word stupid, stigmas and stereotypes around the game. And the work that you guys have been doing with Flo Williams with the hashtag Enough campaign is hoping to break down those barriers so we're not having these conversations anymore.
Yeah, I think the fact that there is the Enough campaign probably tells you everything you need to know, that whilst the women's game is growing and it can almost stand on its own 2 feet, maybe just needs sort of that financial leg up. Like Charlie was mentioning, there's still a lot of people out there who don't see it that way. So there just needs to be that change in perception. And it feels like there is a shift, but there's still a few people out there who maybe just need to see that, you know, this is an incredible game and it deserves its platform.
Just to add to that as well, I've been talking to a few of our female ambassadors over the past couple of weeks after we've been doing this Enough campaign stuff, and they've shared with me some of the comments that they've received throughout their career and the things that stick with them for the rest of their life, and it's horrible, really. I think it's all about educating people, women in sport, women in rugby, football, tennis, netball, whatever it is. They're athletes that have dedicated their lives, and the fact that they still receive these horrible comments, you know, we wanted to show our support by launching this Enough range, and hopefully we can raise the profile of women in sport in the meantime.
Yeah, most definitely. And Mark, obviously you've mentioned before on the podcast how you met your wife as well, and that was through rugby way, way back when it was, you know, slowly building and building and building, and now we're seeing it to where it is now. So there's still work to be done, but we are making positive strides.
Absolutely. I mean, late 80s, early 90s when I had hair and it's all one colour. And Sharon was captain of Staines Ladies. And like any good, she was playing standoff like any good open side. I chased her until she agreed to go out with me.
That's a well-rehearsed line.
That's a club dinner well-rehearsed speech, that one. Yeah, I'll give you that one. But to be fair, I mean, like a bit like Charlie, I was, what, crikey, 22, 23 years old. we started going out with each other. They didn't have a coach, so I became their coach, passed on all my bad habits, learned a load of things. And I was blown away, just like Tom said, I was blown away by the enthusiasm and togetherness that the girls had. And when we moved from the south to the north, Sharon started playing at Manchester. And again, they didn't have a coach, so again, they got me. And they were the same old thing. They were hugely passionate. Their nights out, the Sunday nights, were bigger and heavier than my Saturday nights. So, yeah, long may it continue. And I share what the lads say. It's a game waiting to explode. They're athletes. They're proper athletes.
That's a remark. I'm more than just athlete. I wrote about this time last year, talking to you about it. Some of the skills on show are just unbelievable. Like, you watch Emily Scarrett make an outside break or kick the ball. You watch the way Mo Hunt moves the ball from the breakdown. You watch the way Sarah Burns scrummages and then makes 20 tackles and 18 carries. Like, if any male player at the Titans having those stats, they're raved about. Just because it's a female game, the skill set, the skills are exactly the same. But a lot of the time, because they have had to have an uphill battle, their skill sets are actually better. So it's actually, yes, the collisions aren't as big. And yes, it's not as quick a game because that's science. Men are bigger and quicker than women are, and that's never going to change. But actually, some of the skills on show, the handling, the kicking, all of it is, it's genuinely sometimes more enjoyable to watch than the men's game. I shouldn't believe that. And people sometimes struggle to believe me because I'm always going to be biased because my sister's one of the players. She's one of the 28 professional players. I'm always going to be biased. But genuinely, if she wasn't, I can't say this to convince anyone more than this, but I genuinely would enjoy watching. It's a great game to watch.
I agree. Finally, so Sharon played her last game, I think, in 1995, which was the same year as Rob was born. So she probably played, might explain a few things, she probably played while pregnant.
It all makes sense now.
Explain what things, Mark? No, I know what you're talking about.
I'll leave that to the imagination, come on.
One thing you did mention, Mark, which I'm going to bring Charlie in on, is sort of the word togetherness. And Charlie, when we spoke for that first podcast, you were obviously clearly passionate about women's rugby, but in terms of the family, your family as well, that we know the rugby background, but it seems that they support whatever decision you make. And you said that you go to Sarah's games as much as you can, you get to go and see Kate as much as you can. And that family support is massively important when it comes to playing sport, but obviously playing rugby as well.
Yeah, mate, like, I couldn't be luckier with the family I've got. Like, I can't remember really, until I moved to Jersey where I'm a flight away, couldn't really tell you the last game before then that I didn't have someone at, which is ridiculous because I played all over the world. Like, my dad came over South Africa. Like, I'll tell you the last game I had that I didn't have anyone at before that was when I was in New Zealand. So that was where my family drew the line of coming to watch, was New Zealand, which, you know what, is probably fair enough. So if I was any closer than New Zealand, they made it to every single game. So it's incredible, and I've been lucky enough to, like you said, watch Sarah, watch Kate. Some of my favourite memories are, some of my first memories are watching Dad at Waterloo, like, growing up. So I've just always grown up around rugby, and the thing you do is you go and watch friends, family when they play. My weekends, for as long as I can remember, been dominating watching rugby, and I wouldn't have my life any other way. But I think I probably didn't realise till I came to the academy and boys had moved from all over the country, and it wasn't the norm for their family just to dominate their whole Saturday, drive 3 hours down to Leicester to watch an 80-minute game and then drive 3 hours back. But my family didn't think once about doing that. That was just the norm. So I'm incredibly lucky. And yeah, like I said, probably took it for granted until I saw that isn't what everyone does.
Yeah, you said about drawing the line for New Zealand. That might have to be crossed next year with Sarah, fingers crossed, with the World Cup being in New Zealand.
Hey, if she gets picked, if you think my dad hasn't already spoken about what route he's taken to get there, he's found that he can save some money if he goes to Norway, I think it is. And if he goes through Norway, he saves like a grand or something. He's worked it out already. And Kate obviously is like to him, well, Dad, you're taking me. So they're already all working out. And Mum's working. They're all working out how they'll be going. So Esther needs to do her job and get picked now. No pressure on her.
And that sort of togetherness as well, Charlie, is something that's been key over this COVID-19 period. It's obviously been really tough for everyone. And one of the things which I think you took upon yourself to do was the Instagram lives from sort of March and that first period of lockdown. So was it kind of key for you to do that, first of all, to keep yourself, you know, entertained and busy during that period of time, but also to keep everyone connected and engaged, because we know how tough it is for so many people at the moment?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I say it's been crazy tough, and like, we don't know what's going on at the moment. Like, we could be going, well, a lot of local places are going to lockdown again, and if another national one comes, or some sorts of measures. So I think it's so important we just pick up the phone and talk to each other. And I know, for example, like my grandma, like how much it means to her when we just give her a call, because she's back shielding again now. So things like that. But for me with the podcast, I think, first of all, it's not a little podcast, the Instagram Lives. I think my family were sick of me talking at them. So like, can you just talk to other people somehow? So I was like, right, well, I may as well try and make something out of this. But I think it was a good way to keep me like thinking a little bit. Like, I've got a brain that runs at a million miles an hour about ridiculous things half the time. So I just try to channel that into something that was a bit productive. And I thought, my thought behind it was, there's interesting conversations to have with men and women who I know out there that people might be interested in watching. And if I brought, I had this conversation with Ed Slater after I did the one with him. If we brought one person a little bit of joy on that one day of lockdown, then it was well worth the hour. So that was my thought behind it. And yeah, it actually stemmed some really interesting conversations that happened on the show, and also conversations that happened with those people from the office. It reconnected me with a lot of people I hadn't spoken to for a while. So all around, it was really great. I think Tom's sitting here upset that I never asked him on one, but we've already touched that he doesn't use Instagram. It wouldn't have worked. So, but yeah, it was, yeah, I really enjoyed doing it, and it seemed that people watching seemed to enjoy it. And like I say, if every few days me talking some nonsense with someone I know about sport or something made one person happier, then I'm pleased I did it.
Yeah, it was certainly a brilliant sort of proactive initiative you did, Charlie. And as we've seen, a number of players have been talking about sort of their struggles recently. I know Joe Marler has come out and talked about it, Rob. But one thing which came out over the weekend was a brilliant article in the Daily Mail with Nick Simon and Loosehead's ambassador, Denny Solomon. And it just shows that maybe the stigmas are changing around mental health, doesn't it, Rob? That Denny's come out and sort of expressed his feelings once again about the struggles he went through. And it was a brilliant read from Nick and a brilliant interview from Denny as well.
Yeah, it's great to see the likes of Joe Marler and Denny Solomon be so open and honest around their mental health stories. I think when you've got, you know, guys like that who are right at the top of the game coming out and saying that they've struggled, it's you know, it's a powerful message. It's very brave of Denny to put it all out there in the open, in the hope that he can help one person, and hopefully it did. But yeah, it's all about ensuring that you know people know that it's okay to talk, and it's more important now than ever, like we said. But yeah, we're proud to have Denny on board, and it was great that he could share his story.
Yeah, definitely, Robin. And Tom, a number of people we've spoken to on the podcast when it comes to mental health, they talk about their injuries and how tough that was for them. And I know we've discussed it a number of times before, Tom, and you've probably gone over it 100 times yourself, but your injury is, of course, well documented, how you got back into rugby when you were 19 years old. You made the decision to retire from the game, and obviously now you're back playing again. I mean, just how tough was that for you, Tom? Because me and Rob and Mark as well saw through your Wilmslow High School days and make that leap into Leicester. So how tough was that period for you at such a young age?
Yeah, it was immensely tough. And I actually think my coping mechanism, because I think that's probably well worth talking about, how you deal with it, because there's probably not one way of dealing with things like this, it was quite honestly just to run away. Now, which I don't know if it was good, bad or indifferent, but that really was, like, I just felt, albeit it's been made very clear to me now that this isn't the case, I just felt like I'd let a lot of people down. And the best way I could deal with that was quite simply not have to look them in the eye on a day-to-day basis. And running away to Malaysia was hugely satisfying for me, but equally healing. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm really not advertising that everyone who has an issue, you know, runs away to a Southeast Asian country and doesn't be seen or heard of for 2 years and then comes back a different man. What's great about my story is the fact that it's a good one, and it's just ended up becoming such a huge part of me. And it's really tough to say to someone who's right in the middle, in the belly of the issue. But equally, I will say it's like, sometimes, like my story, what seems to be the worst part, just the worst thing in the world, can somehow, if you get through it, become the best part. And you know, the way of justifying that to people without sounding crazy was this: like, Rugby and Rob and Mark and yourself, Chris, will vouch for me here. Rugby was my life. Like I really neglected school, you know, neglected a lot of things because rugby was just my passion, and it was probably one of the only few things that I was good at. So to use the expression, I had all my eggs in one basket, was probably pretty true. Now, for someone to take that away from me was, I believe, pretty cruel. Now, I ran away to Malaysia, albeit through a valid reason. I did 2 years in Malaysia, and it absolutely changed who I was as a person. And it allowed me to see that, like, there is life outside of rugby, and I had a million more talents that I now use on a daily basis. And I've met a million brilliant people. And the way I live on a day-to-day basis was changed because of my time in Malaysia. And I now can't wait to retire again in the best possible way because I know what plan B looks like for me. And that's a really good, like, way of, again, justifying the comment, like, oh, it seems pretty crappy in the, you know, while it's going on. But just, like, you know, like, hang in there, talk to the people. Run away if you need to. Don't actually do that. It's not a good advert. But, you know, just keep coping, keep dealing with it, keep talking, because it really will get better. And not only better, it might turn really, really good.
If you went back to that period, would you do it all the same way again?
Yes, I would do it. Like, yeah, what a great question. I would do. Do you know what? This is a great question, actually. I would do every single thing that I did in terms of moving to Malaysia and stuff again. Do you know what the one thing I'd do differently? And that was in that short space of time where I felt like the world was against me, I wouldn't have been so bitter, and I'd have made sure that the person I was remained. Because what I regret, and potentially lost a few friends over this, is I was obviously part of Leicester Tigers Academy, and I got injured to the point where I couldn't play anymore. So people of my age, it was an absolute, honestly, guys, when you got called up to the senior team or got your first cap for Leicester, like, it wasn't a better day in the world. It was just everything that you longed for since you moved there. And I felt like I couldn't celebrate with those boys because I was bitter towards the fact that, you know, why couldn't I be there and do it? I'm quite regretful towards that one thing. I wish I could have still been really passionate towards the boys.
On that, I think, like I said, so Tom and I were different years at Leicester, which shouldn't have meant anything as a year difference. But Leicester Academy, you could do a whole other podcast on the Leicester Tigers Academy. One of the big things was, if you were a year older, you were senior to the person below, and that was just how it worked. So you were never that close to the year above you till you got to 20, 21, 22, and you're in the senior squad. But obviously, I was mates with Tom, and we actually bonded over one of the things we didn't say earlier was we both love musical theatre. So we were the only two in the academy who did, because it's not really a rugby player's thing to love that much. So we were mates of that. And the whole thing you said about running away and being bitter, all I remember was we knew Tom was injured. Tom had been injured for a long time. We knew he'd been to see loads of doctors all around Europe and everything. Nothing was really working. Then we had a meeting on the Friday that Tom wasn't in. I remember it so clearly, where we were told, lads, you might have to get around Tom here. He's retiring. So we're all like, that's the worst news we've had in ages. All reach out to him, get nothing back, which is like, understandable. He's going to be having probably the worst weekend of his life. We'll see him Monday. And then on the Monday, we had another meeting that was like, oh, by the way, lads, Tom flew to Malaysia yesterday. And it was like, right, okay. And then it was like, well, actually, we all wanted to say bye. We all wanted to give him a hug. We all wanted to say, like, we're here for you if we need it. And he, because, like you said, he wanted to run away, and potentially the bitterness he's spoken about, we never got that chance. It probably did selfishly rub a few people up the wrong way. And actually, I didn't speak to Tom again until we both found out we were coming to Gloucester together. So a friend of mine I had, like, for 2.5 years, we just didn't talk because we didn't. I think that's what mental health does, is it steals relationships from you if you're struggling sometimes, because you think the world's against you and you turn bitter to anyone who is having a good time. And that's where now, if I had that time again, I think with the education around mental health, I'd probably go, actually, you know what, there's more than just Tom's physical health there. Actually, I need to make more of an effort to reach out to him. Like, he's run away halfway around the world. There's actually a reason he's done that. And yes, the practical reason was he was going to go and set up Kuala Lumpur Tigers. But there's going to be a mental reason to that as well. I think we'd all do it a little bit differently that whole week or so if we had that time again.
Yeah, you know what I was wondering? I don't know if any of you guys got an answer to this question. Is why when, and if you admit you're struggling, why in that period of time is one of the first actions that you actually shut off your support networks? I don't understand that from a psychological point of view, because I think a lot of people, I haven't heard too many people talk about it, but I think a lot of people would admit to that. I really don't know why that's one of the first things that we do, and certainly something that I did. So to go back to today's question, that would be the one thing that I regret and change. I would just have kept who I was a bit closer to me and made sure that the people who were helping me was identified as helpers and not those people that I referred to that I had to kind of look away from, you know, or be embarrassed by.
Very well said, guys, on that topic. And Tom, we caught a couple of years ago now. It was the first time I'd seen you for about 7 years, heading down to Kings. I was worried. I was thinking, is Huddy going to remember who I am? And then he walked up the stairs and knew who I was, that journalist who kept writing rubbish reports about him for Wilmslow High School. But one thing you did say, Tom, was how much you owed Gloucester, and sort of they gave you that opportunity, because we know the story's well documented how you were able to make your recovery. But Gloucester came out, reached out to you instead, you know, gave you a trial and come and play for us. So when you look back two or three years ago when Gloucester gave you that opportunity, you must think, wow, this is a chance I was going to seize.
Yeah, well, the thing that sometimes I think people forget is, you know, rugby clubs are just filled with people, you know, and sometimes people come and go. It's the nature of rugby. We all know that. Just through contracts ending, retiring, injuries, you know, people not getting on, et cetera, So, yeah, I owe a lot of people that did represent Gloucester Rugby a lot of beers, I suppose. And I probably haven't thanked them enough, because in the heat of the battle and just, you know, as day-to-day goes on, you miss the opportunity to. Yeah, I owe a lot of people. Do you know what? It's not just Gloucester. I owe a lot of people a lot of things for my rugby career. You know, just to name a few, like Tosh Askew, who was the Leicester Tigers assistant, or was he back to the OGA? Yeah. You know, he's the guy that came to watch me and scouted me, and he wasn't too good.
That was his best day.
Yeah, yeah. 50% of the time he was really good.
Really good.
You know, so I'd always love the opportunity, if we really spark this conversation, to say, Tosh, you know, thank you so much. To like David Humphreys, you know, who eventually gave me my first proper senior contract. Now, David isn't, you know, at Gloucester anymore. And the first thing is, only when people go, you know, you know, he left Gloucester, you realise, sugar, I've really missed that opportunity. But yeah, I owe Gloucester loads, and I still haven't really repaid them for that. And I think probably the debt that I owe, I'm hoping I'll be able to repay in a few seasons when I get going again, and hopefully good at rugby.
To give that whole story some context for anyone who doesn't know the Tom Hudson story, which is a whole other podcast as well, I've been privileged enough to play with and coach some truly gifted rugby players from our patron of Loose Heads, who is Sean Edwards, who was unbelievable at the age of 15 and 16 and 17, and then he drifted off into rugby league, God knows why. To training with and playing a few touch games with Jonathan Davis, the original one, who could do something on a pitch that nobody else could do. And I saw Tom play rugby when he was 15, 16, 17. I begrudge the fact that he came from Macclesfield, because we all love to hate our neighbours. He and Rob, you can come in here. He had that thing that all great sportsmen had, which is time. All the time, Tom had time. He never looked hurried. He never looked rushed. He did everything like a purring Rolls Royce.
Yeah, completely agree.
He was certainly one of the best players in that team that I covered for the Daily Mail Cup. And he was probably one of the best in your team as well, Rob.
Yeah, I in fact, let's talk about this now.
you lot have staged that. You're waiting, going.
You're waiting for this. I put this in the running order because I can't ever lose an opportunity to say that I got in the team ahead of Huddy at school. We both played in the same position at school. Huddy joined school about halfway through the Daily Mail Cup campaign. But the real story, the real story behind that is that we'd actually played Huddy in a previous round, so he was actually cup tied. But I'll always tell people that I got in the team ahead of him.
On merit, mate. I think it's on merit, yeah. Too, yeah. You know.
There you go. Yeah.
Are you still married on Facebook?
Yeah, pretty sure.
Charlie is furious.
we need a word later. Rob, you're there to me.
We're done.
Yeah,
we're done.
Leave me to.
We're done.
So I guess the point I was trying to make is when you had that cruelly ripped away, and you said that really powerful thing where you ran away. And I think Charlie said it, it's incumbent on everyone else to keep in touch, because your emotions are running all over the place, and that's what we don't do as blokes. We just don't do it.
Yeah.
And that's a crying shame. And I think taking a leaf out of Charlie's book with the Instagram lives, if we can help one person to just, oh yeah, I need to do that, then you win, and the world gets a little bit brighter.
Mark, something I'm learning far too late is it's really okay to ask for help. Like, I have this ridiculous preconceived idea, and my girlfriend batters me for it. Not physically. She doesn't beat me up physically. I want to get that out there now. I feel like I don't want to ask for help when I have an issue, because I have this stupid thing that I don't want to burden people with my issues. And she, like, the saying is, a problem shared is a problem halved. But in my head, I'm like, nah, I'm doubling it. And it's just so stupid. So I think I'm learning it too. I think, like you say, us as blokes, we're so bad at it. Like, ask for help. Because you know what? There's going to be a million people, maybe not a million, but loads of people who want to help you. Like, your mates genuinely want to help you. Your family genuinely want to help you. So I think that's something I'm learning too late. Or I think, yeah, I'm still learning, because I still don't do it sometimes. That's the thing. It's not like a quick fix with things like this. You don't, someone goes to you, you know, it's okay to ask for help. You go, oh God, I'll ask for help every time I've got an issue now. It's not how it works. So you need the reminder. But yeah, I'm still learning. But it is, just ask for help, because we all want to help each other, really, because anyone who doesn't want to help other people is a bit of a bad person in my book.
Yeah, and to second that, Charlie, one of the worst comments that my mum used to say when I was younger is, you'd understand when you're older. And I, as a 14-year-old that knew everything, I couldn't fathom what she meant by that. And that's relevant, because whatever issue you're going through, I'd almost guarantee that people have been through the same thing. And probably not that long ago, and even at a stretch, you're going through the same thing at the same time. You know, you always feel, it's very cliche, isn't it? It's always spoken about, like, so lonely and so isolated, like you're the only person in the world going through this. Well, you're not, or you certainly, you're not within the last few years. You know, dare you to go and speak to your parents who have probably, you know, gone through the same thing, or someone older. You know, so it could even be a stranger to a point, someone that you're not that close with. And I guarantee they will have some sort of experience on this matter.
Just on that, like, I think it's a huge testament to the work you boys are doing.
Yeah.
And then also, like, other places, like, I'm allowed to talk about a rival mental health charity, if that's the way it's like. I play with Connor Joyce, who runs Noggin Sport. Like, the work Loosehead's Noggin Sport, these people are doing in rugby especially, I think, so important, because men are bad at it, because this macho, I'm going to swear first in the podcast, apologies everyone, the macho bullshit we feed each other and ourselves, that we have to be tough and ask for help isn't. So we feature that, but then that's amplified tenfold in rugby because of the sport, and it's the bravado of it, and we are macho and we get on our high horses, that actually we've always thought we can't ask for help. And I think the work you boys are doing, people like Nong, is unbelievable, because it's just, we're having this conversation because of it. And like I say, if this conversation helps one person or makes one person think, then you it's no stretch of the imagination, so you might have saved someone's life. So actually, it's a massive, like, respect to you boys for the work you're doing and keep on doing and how successful it's being. And I just wanted to say that, really.
That's really nice.
Definitely, Mark. And that support across the board has certainly probably helped both Charlie and Tom in their careers. And Tom, just for you know, you went through what you did with your injury and then making your debut against Saracens and scoring, if I'm right, and scoring a try as well on your Premiership game.
Chris, I walked into the lounge to see him watching on repeat. He was rewinding, watching it, and then rewinding. Now, people would say, Charlie, we've got no proof of that. I'd say, don't let the truth get in the way of a good story. I might have walked in, and it happened to be the time where he watched the try, but in my head, he rewound it at least 10 times and watched it.
And I was going to say any truth, but no comment suggests there might be.
No comment.
Okay, cool. But just on that, Tom, that must have been such a special moment for you, because of all the hard work that you've put in, all the support that you've been given, and to go and score in front of the BT cameras, in front of a shed, must have been a special moment.
Yeah, well, you know, we talked about the down parts, but to kind of complete the whole story, that was just, if I would have been allowed to kind of
suppose, stop time, you know, and tell the fans to turn around and maybe tell the BT crew to just look the other way. It would have been such a nice moment just to take a minute and be like, just appreciate the full circle I've been on, you know, and to visualise that journey and almost find a destination was so nice. It was so fitting, you know, and I was desperate. I remember at the time feeling, I'm desperate to feel like this every weekend, because I almost felt like I deserved it. You know, and I think other people will appreciate that. There, you know, maybe more in business or in family or in life. Like, there are some times when you hit whatever marker that you're aiming for, it is so much sweeter when it's taken a goddamn hell of a rocky road to get there. So yeah, it felt really good. You know what? It felt more than just a try. I would say I've scored loads in my career, but I really haven't.
Scored a fair few for Wilms, though, Tom. You're doing yourself a disservice there.
Only when I was playing, when I think Rob scored more.
So I got in the team.
And one of the things that Tom said there, Charlie, was that he kind of maybe felt he deserved that moment, pulling on that Gloucestershire shirt, scoring a try at King's Omen. And something you did with Joe Harvey of Talking Rugby Union just after your premiership appearance for Gloucester against Saracens, which is another thing, obviously, you clearly have in common, guys. But you said sort of the work that you've put in has got to this stage, and it was such a proud moment for you. So do you kind of feel similar, without putting words into your mouth, that you maybe deserved that opportunity a few weeks ago to play in the Premiership for Gloucester?
Yeah, I think the first thing I've got to say is, like, you talk about the rocky road, Tom spoke about, like, our roads were very different. I had a slight speed bump. Tom fell off the Grand Canyon. Like, there's a little bit of a difference. I didn't retire and have to move half around the world to find Master Chai who fixed me. I got told by Gloucester, you're not good enough, and I had to go and play 2 years in the Championship. There's a slight difference there. Now, like Tom said earlier, rugby was his life. Rugby has been my life, my whole life. All I've ever wanted to do is play rugby. And I've been extremely fortunate from the age of 16. I've done that professionally. Now, as you get older, your goals change. So you tick them off as you go. So I remember Leicester first team debut, playing the LV Cup. I played for Gloucester in the LV Cup, played in the Challenge Cup. But I played with England age group. So you tick these things off. But the one, for me, there was a huge chip on my shoulder. I'd spent 6 years at Premiership clubs from 16 to 22 and never played in the Premiership. Now, it's a whole different conversation of why that hadn't happened, and it took me leaving Gloucester to realise what I hadn't done that I needed to get there. So I told myself, if I ever got the chance again, I'd do it differently. So when this chance came, ridiculously through crazy circumstances, it took a global pandemic and 4 injuries for me to get this chance. Like, it was one of them. But when it came, I knew that I'd both physically and mentally got myself prepared for it. So whether that was playing well for Jersey, so I had footage to send to people, this is what I've been like the last 2 seasons, or whether that was mentally preparing for it, of keeping myself mentally in tune through lockdown, or physically training hard than I ever had in lockdown, that if the chance came, I was ready, I wasn't going to miss it. So 2 week trial came and I just felt very ready. Now, thankfully I did well and I got this short-term contract that I'm on now, and I played because the games have just been mental, that if you're there, you're going to play. And I felt I played well in the 2 appearances I've had. But I don't know if I'd say I deserved it, because I've kind of become a believer of now. I've seen enough people not get what they deserve, that I don't think you do always get what you deserve. I think you get what you work for. And I think what I've always probably relied on is that I've done the work. I think I've done enough work to get me to the position that if I got the chance, I'd be ready and I'd take it. And then it's kind of in the gods whether you get the chance, and I did, and I like to think I took it. So I don't know if I'd say I felt I deserved it, but I definitely felt ready for it. I didn't feel like I hadn't prepared. I felt both mentally and physically I was very ready. But yeah, it probably took me losing the chance to realise what I actually had to do to get it, I reckon.
Yeah, was it kind of a weird, and obviously you mentioned the pandemic there, Charlie, but it was kind of a weird twist of fate that it was Gloucester, because of sort of what you'd gone through previously, going to Jersey and then going back to Kingsham?
Yeah, it was strange. I think, to be honest, probably a lot of it came through that I left Gloucester on personal terms, in very good terms with people. So I never really stopped chatting. Like, I obviously had this idiot sat to my right as a link there, so I always knew what was going on. But I kept in contact with a lot of people, like, as silly as it sounds, the chef, the kit man, like the head of S&C, like I get on with them all really well. So I'd kept talking. So actually the nicest thing was the chance came and it was a complete new coaching staff, but I didn't have to worry about selling myself as a person and getting to know people, because I like to think I knew 80% of the people there. I like to think they'd have nice things to say about me. So
I could just go and just worry about the rugby on my 2-week trial. I think that was a huge one. I think if I'd gone somewhere else, you're suddenly a lot more nervous because you don't really know anyone that well. You've got to sell yourself to everyone as a person as well as a rugby player, whereas I could just focus on the rugby, which I think was a huge help.
You've spoken as well, Charlie, about how beneficial your time in the Championship with Jersey is. And we've seen so many players use it as a breeding ground. And I know I keep referencing articles you've done for Talking Rugby Union, but one of our biggest articles over the last 9-10 months or so was the piece you did around the Championship and the benefits of the league. And obviously now you're within the Premiership, but is it still so important to invest in the Championship where necessary? Because so many players get to that level and have the ability to push on.
Mate, hugely. Like, if I hadn't been able to go and play in the Championship, I don't know what I would have done. Like, when I left Gloucester, there was no nibbles for me in the Premiership. I was a 22-year-old who never played in the Premiership, but I've been around clubs for 6 years, so I needed somewhere to play, and that was the Championship. Now, I always say I went on loan to London Welsh when I was 20, my first year at Gloucester, and really sadly that I was there when Welsh finished. Now, I was meant to go on loan to them for the rest of the season, so the year I was 20 and 21, I was meant to spend a whole season with London Welsh. I think if I'd spent that whole season with them, my career would have gone very differently after that because of what I learned in my time at Jersey. I learned so much from playing week in, week out, the expectations that are on you to deliver on a Saturday, every weekend in games that matter, and then come back in on a Monday and prepare for next on the next Saturday. That is being a professional, and I don't think you... I love the A-League. I think it has its place, but you don't learn that in the A-League because you aren't the priority of the club. The organisation's priority isn't your game. So actually, if you don't get the win, there isn't the pressure from the fans, there isn't the pressure from the board, there isn't the pressure from the coaches because it was the A-League. Whereas in the Championship, you are the organisation's main focus. You are the fans' main focus. If you aren't winning, questions are asked. So, and if, for example, if you don't turn up on a Tuesday and do your job in training, questions are asked. Like, whereas when you're running in the bibs, if you don't do your job too well, I go, come on, Charles, sort it out, and that's it. There isn't questions asked the next day. Why didn't you know this? Why didn't you know that? So I can't speak enough about how important I think the Championship is, and I think what's happening to it, what the RFU have already decided to do with the funding cuts, is the wrong call. I worry for it hugely coming out of COVID. Is it going to come out of COVID? Because as there's less money, the RFU just pulling more and more from the Championship, and the clubs are going to struggle. And like Tom said earlier, clubs are made of people. So actually, the clubs are going to struggle, but the people are going to struggle. There is players, there is coaches, there are kit men, there are people who've worked at clubs behind the bar for 30 years who suddenly aren't going to have jobs to pay the mortgage and feed the kids. And I just think it's really sad, to be honest. And I can't talk highly enough about the Championship. It has had a huge bearing on the person and player I am. And I just think it's being thrown away really quite naively and sadly. And I think in 3 or 4 years, people will go, we made a mistake there, but it'll be too late by then.
Yeah, and it's, of course, a developing story, which we hope will be resolved over sort of the next 6-7 months or so. We're not sure what the future holds for club rugby, but hopefully it's going to get through this very difficult period. But obviously the Gallagher Premiership is still going on at the moment. A couple of games left for teams in the top flight, and Gloucester too have a couple of games, I think one game left now actually, after playing Bath the other week. And Tom, just to sum up sort of Gloucester's season from a rugby point of view at the moment, it's been a lot of change obviously over the summer with George coming in and a new coaching staff. So where do you think the club can go next season, and has this been kind of a bit of a learning curve for you since rugby restarted?
Yeah, goodness me, it's been an awesome learning curve for the two reasons that you mentioned. We're in a transition phase as a club, as Gloucester Rugby. Of course, you know, having a brand new coaching structure with David leaving his DOR, you know, and them not exactly deciding to recruit another DOR as such. With George Kivington to come in as head coach and revamp the whole coaching team. And then, of course, the pandemic itself, which we don't have to talk about the challenges that brings. I can't sit and tell you where Gloucester's going to be in 2 or 3 years' time. It wouldn't be fair, and I think I'd be lying. But what I can tell you, we had an awesome meeting today with Skivs, George Kivington, about where he wants to take the club. And listen, I got really behind it, and I got really excited. You know, and he wasn't saying anything silly like top four this year and whatever. He was just talking about the people and the persons that he wants involved in the club. And he made it clear to us that he believes that if we get that kind of culture and those people, then we will start rocking up the league. Without saying too much about what we spoke about, I just think Gloucester is just far better to where we have been the last few years. And I can't put my finger on how, where, or when it went wrong. So then equally, I can't tell you how we're going to fix it. But I reckon the right people are in the right places to fix it.
Yeah, it seems like that as well, Charlie. I mean, I looked at when rugby restarted, we got a few squad lists through. And you look on paper, the talent you guys had, obviously you two. But, you know, Ollie Fawley's been sport. Obviously, you two lead the way. But Ollie Fawley's obviously grabbed headlines recently. Lewis Reed-Sammet's been doing it the whole season. Danny Cipriani does what it does. It's just how good are these guys to play with? Because we are just watching it for 80 minutes. But you guys obviously train with them day in, day out.
It's phenomenal. I compare it to me when I was here last time. We had talented boys then, but you come in now, like, you take the back three, for example, you can only pick, if you're playing as wingers, two of Ollie Thorley, Johnny May, and Lou Rees-Sammet. And that's before you even start mentioning Charlie Sharples, who's an absolute club legend and still won the best league. Like, it's, and then you have Tom Hudson at fullback, which kind of lets the back three down.
But then
Jason Woodward, Tom has to compete with Jason Woodward every day, which I don't begrudge him. So these guys are phenomenal. And I think the exciting thing is they're young. Like, Fawley and Louis are both, they're both younger than me, and I may look 74, but I'm 24. Like, so look at them, and then, like you say, Sip speaks for himself. He does things on a pitch that no one else can. You've got the likes in the centres, Billy Twelvetrees and Mark Atkinson, who both fly under the radar, but are two of the best players I've ever played with. Like, in the centres as well, Chris Harris and Henry Trindus. Like, in the backs, you've got just so many phenomenal players, and then up front, Jake Pledry is maybe the best ball carrier in the world. Is that an outrageous statement? Like, yeah. You've got Jake, you've got Ruan, who can carry the ball almost as well as Jake. You've got Luds, who gets through more work than I've ever seen anyone do. And then a front five that I think on our day, the core front five are physical, they're confrontational, they're in your face. I think we have a very good set piece. It's only getting better. You've got Trevor Woodman banging on about the scrum every single day. We're doing a skills meeting and Trevor talks about scrums. You're like, Trev, I don't really know how this has come up, but okay, we'll talk about scrums. Skibbs, who loves line-outs more than anyone I've ever met, but in the best possible way, and prides himself on having a pack that give good front foot set-piece ball and are hard to scrummage and maul against. Now, yes, it hasn't all been right in these games so far. There have been mistakes and we've lost games we should have won. We're the first people to say that. But the lads had 3 weeks before the season started with us doing rugby. So it's not going to happen overnight. So actually, you look at from where we've come from at the start of the restart to where we are now, I think it's worlds apart in the best possible way. And it's so exciting of where we're going to go. And I think we have, like Tom said, the absolute right people off the pitch, but also so many of the right people on the pitch who are phenomenally talented and are too good at their jobs for Gloucester not to start really putting some serious results and some serious league standings and trophies, etc. together at some point. Tom's reading a book at the moment saying that score takes care of itself, aren't you? See that? Tom's reading the book.
Bill Walsh. Bill Walsh's greatest book.
Yeah, and I'm reading the book.
And I'm a big believer in that of we have too many brilliant players on the pitch that if we get it right off the pitch and we get the right people in, which we have now, the results will now take care of themselves in the next few seasons and Gloucester fans will start seeing Gloucester where we should be. We are too big a club with too big a fan base that have not delivered maybe what we should for too long. I think that's going to change without being too bullish.
The insight from the book, the score will look after itself, is there's one job, getting the right people on the bus, and then the next job, which is minutiae, but it's really important, is to get the right people in the right seats. And that's when you start seeing that multiplication of efforts. And clearly that's something that Saracens cracked a few years ago.
Yeah, have you read the book, Mark?
Yeah, it's got a great read.
Yeah. I'm really enjoying it. I get through about 2.5 pages a day.
Bath. His problem is he reads a paragraph and then gets too interested in it, starts talking to me about it, and then we talk about it for an hour, and then he can't read anymore.
Yeah, slow progress.
It's very slow.
Rome wasn't
built a day and all that.
We'll compare notes on that on Instagram. We'll compare notes on Instagram, Tom.
Yeah? What's on Instagram?
I'll. This is a brave boast, but I'll show you.
Whoa, there it is.
Have you heard the expression, the blind leading the blind?
Completely.
Right, yeah. But just to go back to that point, I think, I don't know who's making it,
yeah, on all everything that we're speaking about, from what we aspire to be at Gloucester to what we talk about in that book, Mark, I honestly believe, and listen, you know, Saracens had their hands smacked and, you know, they did some naughty things and we don't condone them. However, I absolutely believe that those two teams, Saracens and Exeter, have nailed it.
Yeah.
I want to bring Gloucester to where they are.
Yeah.
You know, now, if it was easy, everyone would do it. Dropping them in, aren't
they?
But you know, we are working towards it. And I do think, again, without bringing any trade secrets in from this meeting today, I think Skibs is onto something pretty good. And I, for one, am really excited to try and, here's another one, turn the boat in the right direction.
Normally, Rob tries to use like sayings and cliches for the title of the podcast, but it could be a two-day job, this, Rob.
No, I know. I was literally just thinking it whilst I can't remember what you just said there, Hoodie, but I thought that's the title of a podcast.
Yeah, good.
I can't remember what it was now. I'm going to have to listen back.
Right, down, lads, I'm only here for an hour.
Two bald fellas drinking tea. Was that the one?
It is. Mark's nailed it.
Yeah. Mitchell Brothers on a podcast.
Mitchell Brothers.
Well, I think it's time to see who the Mitchell Brothers has picked for their Mars 15s. And by Charlie's reaction there, he's ready to go. No pad in hand. So over to Mark, who is going to take all copyrights for Mars 15 going forward now, I think, because it is going global, as we said right at the start.
Yeah, can I just, before Charlie reads this out, I'd just like to make a few points, if you don't mind, towards this team. First and foremost, with the pandemic ahead of us, we've got plenty of time for training camps, all right? So a few of these individuals, you'd probably be thinking, goodness me, there's not much experience in there. But we've actually targeted some quite acute skill sets that we will hone and turn into rugby.
Because our thought is, you can't travel to France at the moment. So intergalactical travel, we're a way off with COVID. Yeah. So we're going to take them to a remote training camp. Did we say Finland? Finland are good with COVID, we think. Yeah. So we're going to take them there and we're going to hone the skills. So actually, Tom and I aren't making the trip to Mars because the RFU have cut the funding. Yeah, but we're gonna be there to coach them before they go as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like Tom said, so any other points you want to make?
Yeah, if you don't mind. Sorry. And the second point is, guys, we've got a few double and triple threats, okay? Some of them from their rugby skills, but as we mentioned at the start of the podcast, it's a long way to go. You know, we want morale to be high. So there'll be a few individuals that you're thinking, oh, I'm surprised they've made a World 15, but it's their secondary skills that we're targeting. Just keep that in mind for me. Otherwise, it won't go as we planned. Charlie, over to you.
So do you need to say anything, Mark, or do you want me to just kick it off?
Well, just for anyone listening, they might think, what on earth have I tuned into? But this is the basic premise, just to get us all on the same page, that the Martians have landed during lockdown and they've kind of thought, with all the quiet streets, this would be a nice planet to live on. So they've challenged us to a game of rugby to decide the future of civilization. We've done rock, paper, scissors to decide where the game will be played. We've lost that. So on Saturday, the shuttle leaves for a 4-week trip to play in Mars. Any era, any gender, any ability. Who is your Mars 15?
I'm glad he said any ability.
That's good. Yeah. So, at Loosehead, I'm going to say the name, you're going to think that makes sense, I'm then going to explain how it might not. So we're picking the Beast at Loosehead. You're going to think, oh, the prop for South Africa gave the English a real torrid time in the World Cup final.
Wrong.
That makes sense. Wrong Beast. This is the Beast from the Chase.
Yeah.
Now, our thought here is, really big lad, he's going to be good in the scrum. But what is Tom Hudson, what's key on a bus on a long away trip?
Everyone loves a good quiz, lads. Everyone loves a good quiz.
And he's going to nail the quiz. So that's why the Beast makes it. Hooker, Phil the Power Taylor. Excellent darts. Again, has the physical size to make it in the front row.
Just really emphasize that, Charlie. You know, I said to Charlie, what do you want in your hooker? He said, we've got to have a good set piece going away, you know, and we'll come to 4 and 5. We've got the line out specialist. We need someone who's got the darts. That's why he's in. Congratulations, Phil.
Yeah. Tight head, John Afoa.
Yes.
So we thought we actually need someone who knows how to scrummage to teach Phil and the Beast how to scrummage. Also, John is legendary on the beers. That's a little known fact about John Afoa. Unbelievable on the beers.
Yeah.
So that's why John's in. Second row, Martin Johnson. Led England to World Cup glory. Is going to lead from the front for us, but isn't the captain. We'll get to the captain later. We've really thought about that. He's going to lead us as a planet to glory against the Martians. Second row joining him, and this is the one you're going to think, that's an odd one, Christian Day. You're going to go, Christian Day was a bloody fine second row, but wouldn't put him at World 15. Mark, you've nailed it. He made MasterChef final. We're going to need food. Also, does great work with the RPA. He's going to make sure we're well looked after.
Player welfare, lads, is key. And to have the RPA rep there on board, smart.
Blindside flanker, this man is first off the bus because this is purely the intimidation factor.
Yeah.
He's also on a big cardio cut at the moment because he's looking to change sport, but Hafþór Bjornsson, the mountain from Game of Thrones, is out on the blindside flank. He's getting fitted for his boxing. He's going to get off the bus first and the Martians are going to go, oh Christ, is this what all humans look like? No. But they'll think it for a second.
You bank on that they speak English. Is that what they speak?
Yeah, that's what they say. They speak English. Right. Open side flanker, James Haskell.
Yes.
Now, first of all, good rugby player. Helps to have a few of them in the team, we thought. But secondly, how many stories has he got for the bus? A load.
That's a lot.
Thirdly, team DJ.
Always need
decks.
Yeah.
Now, you're going to say, 4 weeks on the bus, he could run a few people up the wrong way, run up the wrong way. We have enough physical enforcers in this team to keep him in check, we've decided.
Yeah.
So that's it. Number eight,
who else?
Sarah Beckett.
God, I mean, had to be, didn't it?
Yeah, we would have been told off.
Yes.
Oh, no, she's a great rugby player.
Yes.
But we also would have been told off.
Yeah, great rugby player. I just feel, I wasn't naive enough to pick myself, but I'd like a Beckett to go to Mars. So she's in.
That's nice.
She's in. 9 and 10 come as a pair. We kind of went, look, we need experience of winning big things. What's the best win we ever saw? 2003 World Cup. Matt Dawson and Johnny Wilkinson. They're in. Now, there's not much to say about that apart from greater rugby.
Good quiz. Good quiz, people.
Yeah,
well, of course.
Yeah, Christmas sport.
Sport, Mark.
Mark,
we can come along.
If there's another spot on the backroom staff, you're coming.
Oh no, it turns out it's not. You can't.
No,
mate.
We'll get to that. Centres, inside centre, Arnonu. Again, just really good at rugby, kind of as I thought there, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, like I said to Charlie, Hocker has a specific skill that we need. We just need a good rugby player at 12. We can't help but feel, we've done a little bit of analysis on the Martian team, they run a lot off the top of the line out, so we need a good, steady defender in midfield. That's all the thinking is behind that.
13, we just again went with probably who's the best 13 we've ever seen play the game. Emily Scarrett.
Yeah.
So we've gone for. Nice. Also, I think with how gravity works in Mars, I'd work with Brian Cox. Her kicks are going to go even further because she leathers the ball. So, yeah, but also, again, just a really, really fine rugby player. On the wings, Jonah Lomu, self-explanatory. He's Jonah Lomu.
Yeah.
Usain Bolt. Just
catch him if you can.
Go on, we'll teach him catch a ball, you try and catch him.
Yeah.
And then fullback is our captain. Now you're going to say the man has precisely zero rugby experience, but we've gone with him at fullback because his nickname is Air and he's good in the air, so it's Michael Jordan. Now you're going to say, why is he captain? Name me one other human being on this planet that has successfully led a side in a sporting victory against aliens. Michael Jordan did it in Space Jam.
This could be the making of Space Jam too. This could be it. This could be
Space Jam. Brilliant.
Michael Jordan's been there. He's done it.
Literally got the T-shirt.
Has got the T-shirt. I've heard he's going to get us a good deal with Nike for the kits as well. So that's why Michael Jordan is captain, and that's our 15. You asked us to pick some backroom staff. So we've got a team manager, a head coach, a kit man, and a water carrier as well. So team manager, we thought, this is a big old game, isn't it, Tom? Probably the biggest in human history.
Well, yeah, listen, with it being away from home and the nature of the event, we need someone very savvy with social media.
We're going to raise the profile. So, Mark, your out hoodie's out as well.
Yeah.
Who we've gone for? Eddie Hearn.
Classic.
You can't scroll through Instagram without seeing Eddie at the moment. Head coach. Side. There's a lot of mixing of different people, different cultures, different time frames, different professions. We need a man who builds a culture like no other. So Jurgen Klopp is the head coach.
Nice.
Quite correctly.
Absolutely. No question.
Yeah.
I knew that would go down well with this group.
So now, yeah. Kit, man, you're going to say, lads, you've really pushed the boat out on making this make sense already. You're taking the mickey a bit by choosing someone who's not actually real. And to that, we'd say, this is our list. So, the kit man is Tony Stark, Iron Man. Tell me someone who's going to bring better kit for the lads than that. That's an exciting stash day.
and everyone loves stash day. Everyone loves a stash.
Mark's wearing his loose head stash now. That's how much he loves it. And then finally, we need someone to carry the waters. Now, we did want to put ourselves in at one point to get on the trip, but we thought, no, there's not much we can bring. But what can someone bring is a bit of expertise of the surroundings. There aren't many people in the world who've been to space, but Neil Armstrong has, and he was the first. So Neil Armstrong is carrying the water. And they're going to win. It's going to be a bloodbath, actually. It'd be quite embarrassing if they don't nil them. 100-0?
Well, listen, rugby ability, I'm not so sure. We're hoping that rugby's new on Mars.
Yeah, that's how much rugby has Mars played?
But it's like we said before, that 4 weeks is going to be great. There's a lot to go on.
And
on
the night out after is going to be big. It's going to be big. I'd like Sarah Beckett to be in bed by 10 p.m. though.
no curfew in Mars, though, is there? We're all right.
Yeah, the bars will stay open later. And you know what? I don't know who makes the mock-ups for your Instagram of the team sheets, but I'm really looking forward to you sending the list to do this one.
Good luck, sir. Good luck. Why are they all hanging their head in shame?
They're all like, we're not releasing this.
Normally, we have a couple of questions for this, Tom and Charlie. Like, oh, you picked him in. Literally speechless. No idea. I mean, Philip Howard Taylor and the Beast from Chase, I had no idea where it was going from that moment on.
Yeah. But now you want to see them packed down together, don't you? You want to see Phil calling his locks in and Martin Johnson and Christian Day's heads just popping through. This was a lot of thinking. Like, Tom spoke about this great meeting we had with Skibs today. It would have been better if we weren't already focused on this.
Yeah.
Brilliant Mars 15. I'm not sure we're going to have a better one throughout the series of Loose Heads podcasts that we do, but that was... very, very entertaining, guys, as has the whole podcast. We really appreciate you being so open and honest about the mental health side of things as well as, of course, having a laugh and talking a bit about rugby as well. So cheers once again to Tom and Charlie for your time this evening.
Cheers for having us, lads. It was great. And yeah, keep up doing all the great work. As much as we had a laugh, some really important chat there, I think. So yeah, cheers for having us, boys.
No problem at all. And as always, thank you to Mark, Rob and Dave for joining us.
Cheers.
Thanks, lads.
And that has been another Loose Heads podcast in association with Talking Rugby Union. Thanks very much for listening.